Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the La Liga Lowdown podcast. It was match day 20 this weekend in Spain. My name is Ruairi Barlow. I'll be your host for today, and I'm joined by the effervescent Matt Clark. How are you, Matt?
Thank you, Ruairi. I'm very well. Not as effervescent as your new peroxide blonde hair, though. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to say I lost a bet, but it was just a bad decision. And there were plenty of bad decisions in Spain this weekend, as we'll be coming on to later, which was one of my better transitions, I have to say.
Polemica.
Polemica indeed. Lots of controversy in Spain. Real Madrid had a big win, which we will get into later. There was another Sunday night partidazo. It does seem whatever they put in that spot does seem to produce. In Spain, was there anything that stood out to you this weekend from the fixtures, Matt?
Well, being the kind of stat nerd that I am, I must say that the two longest runs of winless matches in La Liga that were kind of ongoing, Osasuna and Levante, were both ended this week in fairly emphatic style. Of course, Levante is the biggest story with their fantastic 2-0 victory, their first win in, 273 days, 8 months plus, much needed for them. And then, of course, Osasuna beating Cádiz on Sunday afternoon to end their bad streak. And now that baton passes to Alaves and Cádiz themselves. So, again, the kind of who's in worse form question will pass over to some new clubs for next week.
Definitely. And to be honest, I think it would be rude to start elsewhere. I think Levante have to be the headline. I mean, they had broken a record and now they have ended that record. Hopefully it'll be a while before we see that set again. But on that note, I will pass over to yourself and Paco Polit, who was there to give his views on Levante and their record-breaking run.
I'm here with a very happy Paco Polit. He saw Levante win after 273 days, 27 La Liga matches. Finally, they got a win again in La Liga, in a game which had absolutely everything, Paco. First of all, how relieved are you from a Levante perspective to get that win?
Well, Matt, I believe that, it's been quite a while since the last time that Levante fans had the chance of celebrating such an incredible feat. It's true that 8 months have been very tough for the fan base, and I was pretty amazed by how Levante were able to win possibly one of the games where it was more on the edge till the last minute for both sides. I was very surprised because they have deserved the win or deserved more points earlier this season, and they never seem to be, able to do things properly and ultimately get the wins and pick up the points. And suddenly, possibly in the worst week I can remember after, falling and getting beaten and thrashed by Villarreal with that 5-0 scoreline, and after Kiko Catalan, the president, had to, the following day come out in a press conference and say that he will submit himself to a vote of confidence at the end of the season, and after also the protests by the fans and that very tense meeting that they had on Monday night after the team got back from Estadio La Ceramica. You know, everything was against the side, the team, and suddenly they were able to seize the win. So that's the greatness of football, and that's just how unpredictable it can be. Even though, at the same time, I have to admit that Mallorca possibly left Ciutat de Valencia with the feeling that they deserve something more, and they are not wrong, in my view.
Yeah, I mean, they had a penalty saved, and some say Aitor was perhaps off his line, and there was a disallowed goal as well from Salva Sevilla's handball. It was a game which, as we say, had absolutely everything, and the dramatic emotional scenes at the end of the game show just what it meant. Mm. Comandante Morales scoring that second goal. And perhaps the most crucial thing is that Levante kept a clean sheet after shipping so many goals. Alessio Lisci was on Twitter saying, "Thank you for your support. Thank you for your patience. Sorry for the delay." So you can see that it's really been getting to him that they're conceding so many goals. How important is it for them to keep that clean sheet?
Well, I think it was something that all of the managers which came before, Paco López at the beginning of the season, later Javier Pereira, and now Alessio Lisci, were trying to get right at some point. Eventually, Paco López was known for that offensive playstyle, and obviously it wasn't the top priority, because always you can score one more goal than the opposition. Whereas for Javier Pereira, I remember that his debut game against Getafe was an awful, awful, awful goalless game against Getafe that was possibly one of the most horrible games I've seen. Pereira wasn't fit for the job, and it was seen after his awful run in Levante's sidelines. And now Alessio Lisci, obviously, he had been trying to get it right and get a clean sheet for many, many games. The team is already out of Copa del Rey after getting knocked out by a team of a lower division. And obviously against many, many sides, against Espanyol, they allowed 4 goals. Against Villarreal, they allowed 5. Against Sevilla, they allowed 5. It's true that Alessio hasn't had the smoothest landing in Levante's dugout, but at the same time, that's the desperation of the situation. If Levante weren't in such a mess, Alessio wouldn't be the manager at this point. So, yeah, if you take everything into consideration, I believe that possibly the team has changed a bit, especially in the midfield. I believe that Pepelu had a monster game. Levante's youth academy player was possibly one of the greatest players in the team against Mallorca. Aitor had a couple of good saves. Also, the penalty, even though it's some controversial decision by the ref, because he was maybe a tad bit in front of the goal line, and VAR should have been, I don't know, possibly checked the play, and possibly the penalty should have been taken again. But at the same time, Levante have been possibly the most unlucky team of Europe for many, many months. And I believe that in one single game, like, all of the luck came back in some sense. Like that penalty, also the disallowed goal to Ferninho, another one disallowed to Takekubo, who was in an offset position before finishing the play. Overall, it was a very tense game, and the scenes, as you said, Matt, earlier, regarding Morales' goal, players were crying, fans were absolutely nuts, out of their minds. I don't know, it was a win long in the making, and you could see for many of the players that it was like getting rid of an incredible backpack full of rocks. And I possibly think that after this first win in match day 20, with so many games ahead, with so many face-to-face games against other teams who are fighting for relegation, maybe people were, they jumped the gun, believing that Levante were already done by this point in the competition, whereas possibly they could come out of the January games with many chances of being still in the fray and remaining in La Liga next season.
Well, I was just going to ask about that, because as you say, those after such a dramatic and tense week, the scenes of unity were clear for all to see. And the next two fixtures, Cadiz and Getafe, two head-to-head matches, as you say, with direct rivals. Can this result be a springboard? Can they stay up?
Definitely. At least you listen to what the players say and what Alessio states in his press conferences, and they are true believers in the possibility of remaining in La Liga, because that's how the schedule has been settled this season. They are playing against Cádiz, obviously, at home once again. After being wrapped up with this win, I believe that the attendance the following week after the Copa del Rey fixtures is going to be huge in Ciudad de Valencia. Let's see how the restrictions affect the fan base going to the stadium. But overall, I believe that the ground is going to have an incredible atmosphere against Cádiz. Both teams are fighting tooth and nail to avoid relegation. And that's why in such a face-to-face showdowns, Levante have to build their remaining in La Liga. If they don't win those games, they are done, obviously. And that's why the rest of the sides didn't count in Levante's resurrection. And winning a couple of games, only a couple of games. They only need to win, you know, against Cádiz, for example, and against Alaves, who are two of the direct competitors. And suddenly they would be in the middle of the fights with many, many games ahead of them. So suddenly this win came in the most unexpected way, in the most unexpected week. But surely it has resurrected in many ways Levante's optimism, and especially the spirit of the fans, of the players, and obviously of the club. Remember, the crisis hasn't ended. It's only one game. But suddenly it seems that Levante fans are seeing the life with different kind of spectacles.
Always fascinating to get Paco Pollitt's insight as ever. That result moves Levante closer to safety. They're now 6 points off Alaves, who are in 17th place. Alaves themselves, they picked up a 0-0 draw with fellow Basque team Athletic this weekend. Osasuna managed to break that winless run, as you said, a 2-0 victory over Cádiz. Cádiz, who sit on 14 points, 3 points above Levante and three away from Alaves. I mean, these were two quite big fixtures for the relegation candidates. Did anything stand out to you?
Well, apart from the weather in the Basque Country, which was absolutely torrential rain for that game, it made me laugh when Alaves before the game tweeted that they asked fans not to bring umbrellas with, you know, pointed metal sticks to the game because it was like against the rules. But it was that wet that you needed an umbrella today. But yeah, in terms of the results, obviously massive for Osasuna because they'd gone. I think their last win was middle of October, so, and they're out of the cup now as well, so they're kind of really in a bad run. Again, you just start to get those questions asked about Arrasate, and because you mentioned it last week, the run they were on last year as well, and needing to turn that around. Hopefully this is a springboard for them. And yeah, Cádiz, you do fear for them. Again, I think you mentioned this last week. They don't seem to have any kind of plan B, and if they go behind in any game, you're like, well, that's it. And yeah, as you said, they're underperforming compared to last season. And I think teams have just kind of found them out a little bit. And when plan A doesn't work, there's not a lot else there, unfortunately, because they're a great club, but they are struggling. Alaves, they, two draws for Mendilibar to start his time against two Basque sides. But it doesn't get any easier because they've got Betis away next and then Barca at home. So yeah, Alaves will still be in the relegation battle for, you know, a good while yet. Hopefully they can do a bit more business in January. They've already brought in two players, of course, Jason and Escalante, who Mendilibar knows very well. So I'm sure once he gets those integrated, they can maybe start to play a kind of more of a Mendilibar football style. And of course, the other team from that group you've just mentioned, Athletic, obviously they're obviously higher in the table, but again, another draw. They absolutely love to draw, don't they? I think they've drawn 8 of their 11 away games this season, something like that. It's crazy, and of course they now have the Supercopa to contend with. So yeah, after an exciting couple of weeks for them with the youngsters scoring goals, Oyan Sanset and Nico Williams, hopefully now they can kind of, it was a bit of a disappointing result for them, I think, to not even score at Mendy. So yeah, but again, the relegation picture, big week for Levante, of course, as we've heard. Mallorca as well, you start to fear for them. Yeah, and Cádiz. So we'll see how that shapes up.
Yeah, and just to mention there on Osasuna, that result does move them up to 12th, gives them a real bit of breathing room. They're now 9 points away from Elche in 18th. And yeah, that really helps him. I have to say, Budimir got the goal today to open the scoring. And although I don't think he's maybe as good a striker as maybe Kike García, I do think he's the best goal scorer that Osasuna have. And yeah, perhaps maybe more minutes needed for him. But that is by the by, and he certainly came up trumps for them this weekend. We are going to end the first half of the show, but coming up, we have Luis Gatterdgood to opine on Villarreal at Atleti, which was a fantastic game. And then we had Real Madrid, Barcelona to come, of course, in the second half of the show, and much more of the European race.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the second half of the show. There's a Clásico coming up in midweek in the Supercopa, and we will touch on both of that duo, and we'll get into the European race as well. But first, we will go to Luis Gatterdgood with Matt Clark, who mentions an article also that he put on the La Liga Lowdown website, a very good article which details all of the transfer needs for each team in La Liga. Do check that out on La Liga Lowdown. But first, let's get into Villarreal against Atleti, the reigning Europa League champions against the reigning champions of Spain.
Well, the last time I came on the podcast was following the defeat against Barcelona, where we completely dominated them but lost the game. And it's kind of the same story here after playing off the champions at our home. As we should have won, but we didn't lose the game. We only dropped 2 points, which is a positive in that respect. But as I say, it's a welcome point, and our unbeaten run is ultimately extended to 5. And the main positive that we can draw from this is the fact that we scored 17 in these 5 games, which is mainly due to the return of Gerald Moreno, which was what I said in the last time I came on the podcast. I said that as soon as he comes back, I think everyone around him will all buy into kind of his quality. And yes, as soon as he's come back, we're free scoring. This will really help us in results coming up, especially in the Champions League. And hopefully, fingers crossed, Dan Gilmour will also be back.
Yeah, he's been away from the lineup for a few weeks, and a lot of people are speculating about his potential January move somewhere. But leaving that aside just for the moment, as you say, fantastic game of football. Atleti ahead with an outstanding goal from Correa, really caught off his line. Then Villarreal thought they were level. Gerald Moreno's penalty was saved by Oblak. Pareco scored the rebound, but it was disallowed for handball, which technically was probably right, but seemed so harsh. And then Villarreal did equalise through Pau Torres. Again, Oblak wouldn't have been happy with that, but Villarreal level. And in the second half, they were the much better side to start the half. They were ahead. Alberto Moreno, who I'm sure you'll mention in a moment. And then, of course, Condogbia equalising for Atleti. And then Villarreal were the ones who were going for the win late on. Yeah, which players stood out for you in particular?
Well, before we go on to the obvious choice, which you just mentioned, Alberto Moreno, I'd just like to see Pau Torres, who for me is the man of the match, quite clearly, to be honest. He got another goal. He scored in the last game, and he's kind of becoming a real threat from set pieces, not just from corners. And in this game in particular, he was just completely dominant. He did have a couple of minor slip-ups, but overall 73 accurate passes out of 86, which equates to about 85% passing success. Five clearances, two block shots, two duels, one. Six recoveries and two successful dribbles. It was a complete performance from the centre-back. He was really good tonight, and the goals that were scored were by Atletico Madrid. We're just not down to him at all. The Pereira goal, what can you do to stop that, especially as a centre-back? And the second goal is just another keeping mistake, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And that brings me on to Rulli. Unfortunately, it's another mistake. And unfortunately, he's a really good technical keeper. But mentally, I just can't see him dealing with it anymore. Like the responsibility, I'm not sure what it is. It's kind of pressuring him a little bit too much. So I think we have to look in January, this month coming up, is what we do to kind of revert these changes. Revert these problems, sorry. And in my article the other day, I interviewed Jamie Campbell about what we could possibly do about this. And he quite intelligently came up with the option of Neto at Barcelona, and out of favour keeper. He hasn't kind of touched the starting 11 in a while. And Marc-André ter Stegen is kind of resurging himself in recent weeks with his quality. So I think Neto would be a quality introduction to the team. And now moving on to Alberto Moreno, where to start with him? He's absolutely everywhere. We were kind of trying to work out where he was playing at the start of the game. He was playing up front. Jared Moreno was kind of drifting out to the right, where he started his career. And the Atletico Madrid defense just couldn't deal with him. And his versatility is actually surprisingly unmatched at the minute, which is a welcome addition. And what he said in his interview after the game is kind of shown in his performances, because he said after the game that coming back to Spain and to Villarreal kind of really helped him fall back in love with football. And as I've just said, it shows in the way he plays at the minute, which you can't really fault, if I'm honest.
Yeah, he's been fantastic in the last few weeks and contributing with goals as well, which not many thought he had in his locker. You touched on Rulli there. He doesn't seem to like playing against Atleti in particular. And bizarrely enough, Unai Emery has never beaten Diego Simeone, 16 games now. And Gerard Moreno has never scored against Atleti. Of course, he had that chance with the penalty. But as you say, his all-round game is so good, and he's clearly brought a level to Villarreal. Looking ahead then to the rest of the season, obviously they've got the African players out at the moment in the AFCON tournament. But once they come back, and perhaps with a couple of additions, do you think Villarreal can push for the European spots, maybe even Champions League again? Is that realistic?
100%. At the moment, we're eighth, 2 points below Rayo, who are probably likely to start falling down the table because their away form isn't that good. And I don't think they can keep up the home form that they've kind of maintained up to this point in the season. I don't think they can keep that going. So I could possibly see us going above them. And Iraola said before the game today that his main focus is to stay up this season. Short term, we've got Elche next away. I would hope 3 points. I would hope nothing less. Then Mallorca at home, another one where I'd be disappointed if we didn't pick up 3 points. Betis away, which will be a very interesting one considering how we played against them at home. And then the big one after that, Real Madrid at home. And I think our performances against the big three for this season have really shown that we can definitely take points off them. And I'll be hoping for something against Real Madrid. But I wouldn't be too disappointed if it's a loss. Then we've got Granada away. Difficult one to call because Granada are kind of mixed with how they're performing at the minute. But then we go into February with the Champions League game against Juventus. And that is the main hope. I really think that we can definitely win that. That's a massive upgrade to our chances following our original draw against Manchester City, which would have been very difficult to kind of get anything from. But this Juventus side, they've shown today with the performance against Roma. They did win, but it was a really hard fought performance, and you can definitely see us controlling that tie to the maximum potential, if I'm honest. So this next month or two coming up, it's going to be really, really interesting to see what will happen, and it will be very influential to our hopes at achieving European places in La Liga. And if I'm honest, I do want to progress in the Champions League as well, because that obviously brings many financial benefits, as well as getting our name out there to the rest of Europe. So yeah, that's what I can see coming up in the next couple of months.
A thrilling game and fascinating insight from Luis Cattergut as well. I think it's best if we sort of start at the top of the table and work our way down so we can cover the whole sort of races as they go. Real Madrid, of course, won 4-1 against Valencia at the Bernabeu. And for me, I mentioned it last week, Vinicius and Benzema, when you have the two together, it's a different proposition.
Yeah, I absolutely concur. Vinicius and Benzema were just, on a different level again on Saturday night. Benzema scored his 300th goal for the club, joins an elite group of just four players to achieve that. It's a phenomenal landmark. And when you think that so much of his career there was kind of servicing Cristiano Ronaldo, you do wonder how many he could have got had he been the main man for all his time there. And yeah, I think only now are people starting to really rate him in the terms that he should be. And of course, Vinicius as well. His first goal in particular was just outrageously good. The way he kind of slalomed his way into the box and then just kind of knocked it round one defender and then raced round him and then side-footed it to wrong-foot the keeper. It was just really good goal to watch. And I don't want to mention the Clasico coming up because, you're a Barca fan, but it would be quite ominous, I think, for Cules, the form that Real Madrid are in.
One team that really doesn't look threadbare and perhaps much less impressive than thinking many minds, but are keeping pace with Real Madrid, are Sevilla. They won 1-0 at home to Getafe. A Rafa Mir goal was enough for them. They stay 5 points back from Real Madrid, but they do have that game in hand. Any thoughts on this one, Matt?
Yeah, I think I know you're quite pessimistic about the way they play, but for me, I think it's phenomenal what Lopetegui's been able to do there, because in the last few years, Sevilla have been kind of a European team, but they've never been this consistent in terms of the top four. And he's just come in and they've been, fourth, and now second by a distance now. And I don't think that should be underestimated, the job he's done there, because, yes, there's been investment, but at the same time, they've lost some key players from those previous years as well. You think of Ever Banega a couple of seasons ago, and there's always talk that, Jules Koundé, even Diego Carlos could be on the move. There's always a speculation with Sevilla about transfers in and out, but to manage to keep that group focused. And again, they had to make changes today. Bono, of course, away with AFCON. Dimitrovic came in, looked very solid. Getafe weren't awful. They were decent in the game, but the goal was phenomenal. Rafa Mir's touch, unbelievable. It was as good as Benzema's in the Clasico last season. David Soria probably should have done better, but in terms of the execution of the skill, it was magnificent. And Rafa Mir is really stepping up. He's in a good bit of form now, and hopefully he can kind of continue to lead that charge, because in terms of the benefit of the league for neutrals, we need Sevilla to push Real Madrid further.
Definitely, definitely. I did just want to quickly mention that I would have been absolutely shocked if you were to tell me that I was going to tweet out that Sevilla and Julen Lopetegui's Sevilla are the most Cholo Simeone team in the league, because they are the best at grinding out results for me. But if you said that to me when Lopetegui was in charge of Spain a couple of years ago, I would have been pretty shocked. But yeah, as I say, coming on to Barcelona, who couldn't see out a lead against Granada. They were 1-1, they drew with them down in Granada. And Luke de Jong scored again, and Barcelona looked reasonable again for a portion of the match and subsequently.
He's better than Neymar.
When he's heading the ball, he's better than Neymar, as Ronald Koeman famously remarked. Yeah, I mean, Granada, again, they sort of proved their mettle and came into this as Barcelona faded.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, it's becoming a theme now. And admittedly, it's not all Xavi because it was happening before. But, you know, when you have leads, and I think you were saying this on Twitter, it's a young group and it's an inexperienced group for the most part. But when you can't close out games, you're going to struggle to find that consistency. And it's happening a little bit too often for Barca. Obviously, it happened against Celta, famously the 3-0, 3-3 game. That was, of course, under Sergi Barjuan. But since Xavi's come in, it's happened a couple of times as well. So it will be a concern. Of course, the plus point for Barca is, of course, well, Luke de Jong scoring again, as you said. Everyone was saying he was on the way out, but his last two performances have been very encouraging. And, you know, Barca have scored more headed goals than any other team in the league. So, you know, if you're going to be sending crosses in, why not have Luke de Jong? Because it's a viable option. You know, it might not be pure Barca DNA, but it's proving to be effective. And right now, Barca can't really be, you know, beggars can't be choosers at the moment. One thing I did like, of course, was Dani Alves returning to Barca. We all love Dani Alves, their oldest ever player now. And he has as many assists in the top five leagues this season as Kevin De Bruyne. So, you know, there's that. but yeah, as for Granada, again, great fighting spirit. It was a complete reverse of the earlier fixture when Granada scored early and it was Barca that equalised late at Camp Nou. I think that was another header. It was Araujo, wasn't it? But this time it was Antonio Puertas equalising for Granada, maintaining their positive unbeaten run. They're kind of in a similar position to Osasuna now. They've got a bit of a cushion over the bottom. Probably too much to ask to push for Europe, but, you know, a fairly solid season in the transitional year post Diego Martinez. So there was concern about Robert Moreno, and myself included, but he's proving me wrong.
Yeah, certainly. And just a couple of points. You obviously remarked on having Dani Alves back, and my word, it's comforting to have somebody who sort of understands his role as well as Dani Alves does, compared to some of the fullbacks that Barcelona have played in recent years. And just a quick thing that I wanted to point out, in about, I want to say the 60th minute, Ferran Jutla and Luke de Jong, who was playing very well, went off in for Ez Abde and Memphis Depay to come on for Barcelona. And I think in that moment, Xavi was thinking, right, we put Abde on, we put Depay on, we exploit the space and we kill the game. And it sort of had the opposite effect in the fact that Barcelona really lost control from that moment on. Depay couldn't hold the ball. He was very lackluster. And Abde was not the most effective with his use of the ball. And I think it was a sort of... He spanned the roulette wheel and he lost in this occasion. And that kind of partly explains why Barcelona failed to hold out. Should be said that also Gavi picked up a red card later on, which didn't help. But I mean, it was kind of inevitable given it was Gavi and he was on the pitch for nearly a full 90 minutes. Move on now. There's two sort of games I want to come on to, and we'll move on to the off-the-pitch stuff afterwards. So keep your gunpowder dry on that one, Matt. But Real Sociedad picked up a crucial 1-0 victory over Celta Vigo at home, and Rayo and Betis drew 1-1 in Vallecas, which was an excellent game. Anything that you sort of wanted to highlight from these two?
Well, yeah, I think for La Real, Rafinha was making his debut against one of his former clubs, of course. And this is a really big win for Real Sociedad because they've been on their own bad run, winless in six, I believe. If you look at the form now, apart from the top two, which are obviously kind of clear of the rest, Real Sociedad were the only side in the top half to win this weekend. So they've made up some real big ground in the European race. They're now level on points with Atleti, and, you know, who are fourth. And when you think about the respective seasons, everyone's, you know, Betis have been fantastic and they're flying. Real Sociedad have faded massively. They're only 1 point behind Betis. So I was very surprised when I saw that because, you know, the way the narratives are going, you'd think Betis would be kind of a long way clear of that. But it just shows how tight that top half is. And this European race is gonna roll all the way, I think. And as you say, there's so many inconsistent teams that you wouldn't really bet on any of them right now, making it third and fourth, because, you know, Betis are finding ways to well, I wouldn't say they're becoming inconsistent again, because that's probably unfair, but they are certainly dropping more points now than they were kind of in autumn. We've mentioned the Rayo, their home form potentially. They're still unbeaten at home, which is phenomenal for a new promoted side. But yeah, their away form probably will end up costing them in the end. But yeah, as for La Real, Nico Oyarzabal, once again, match winner. What would they do without him? Isak went off injured, which is a big blow. Yeah, Oyarzabal. Words fail me. He's so good.
He certainly is. One thing that perhaps wasn't quite as impressive was the off-the-field comments from Betis. Alex Moreno, it should be pointed out, was sent off in the first half for a high foot or a dangerous challenge, depending on how you view it. He made contact with Isi's head. Isi was bent down low, but this led to sort of criticism, not only from Pellegrini, but also from the official sort of Betis club Twitter account, as happened with Bordalas and the Valencia official club account as well. Although at least Valencia's did kind of make me chuckle, because anyone who's a fan of Money Heist, or La Casa de Papel as it's known in Spanish, they tweeted the Money Heist account, Valencia did, saying robberies are becoming quite repetitive in Madrid these days, aren't they? Which at least did make me chuckle. But I mean, we spoke about it with La Real last weekend. Your thoughts, Matt?
Yeah, it's a concerning trend, and I don't think it does anyone any favours. I'll go into it a little bit in a second, but just I think it's worth just reading out what Betis actually said. This is from their English account. Real Betis have always been absolutely respectful with the referees and their decisions, but what we've seen today is incomprehensible. The job of a referee is to be fair and just, not the disgrace we have seen today at Vallecas. A mistake is understandable, but one error after another, all in the same direction, damaging the rules, cannot be understood. Alex Moreno's red card, a handball inside the home area, foul before the goal, and foul from Carvalho when he was alone. There is no possible explanation. I mean, that is, you know, very, very damning words. And from an official account, that is, I mean, it's over the line, isn't it, really? And like you say, it's not just one incident. Real Sociedad last week, showing the video of the play, which they were kind of furious about. Valencia, after their penalty against Real Madrid. And Betis today, who, again, like you said, Pellegrini was fuming after every decision. He was complaining about the grass, the decisions, the inconsistency, everything. and it's worth saying that the standard of refereeing isn't that great. That we must say that and acknowledge that. And a lot of fans are frustrated with it. But at the same time, I don't see where or how this will solve anything, because from the official club accounts, and that just kind of, you know, leads to pylons, and it's a very negative spiral in terms of social media activity. And in the kind of the real world, it sets a very kind of negative tone when it comes to refereeing. But at the end of the day, if the referees that are there are kind of, you know, so disincentivized to continue, who are we going to have left? You know, it will become a crisis very soon.
Yeah, I just wanted to interject there. I think, I mean, scathing words, everyone understands it from a certain point of view. Everyone who is a football fan, has supported a team, has been on the end of a decision which is peed you off, for want of a better description. But I just don't understand what they hope to achieve. And it's different to managers. Managers have at least some kind of sway in the governance of football. So managers can, and that's a problem in itself if you think the fans don't have a say, but club accounts specifically, or an official club media resource, I don't understand what they hope to achieve from this. I mean, are you going to put pressures on the referee? Not quite. I think managers, they may seek to pressure referees, and they may seek to provide excuses for their teams. That's understandable. I get the point of view, but moving on to something slightly more positive, and that is the MVP picks for this week. Matt, who stood out for you?
I think we have to have Karim Benzema in here. Another two goals. He's probably going to have his best season in terms of goal scoring in La Liga. He's on track to smash that. And landmark, as we said, landmark match for him. 300 goals, now 301, of course. For Real Madrid, he just continues to lead that attack, and And there's no secret that Vinicius' form is helped by Benzema being that good, because they kind of, as a pair, they are now probably the best in Europe, it must be said. I mean, individually, you look at the likes of maybe Lewandowski or Salah at Liverpool, but I think as a pair, you know, they're the most devastating in Europe. And if they're on song, every defence, you know, will hate to face them.
Yeah, Benzema is just an absolutely gorgeous footballer to watch at the moment. Speaking of, the very handsome Mikel Merino is one of my picks this week. He's so, so very good. And I mean, Alguacil made sort of waves by calling him the best player in La Liga, I think, a couple months ago, which is quite the statement. But in terms of sort of all-round, as a sort of all-round footballer, he is fantastic and he makes such a difference to La Real. The ball that he plays, he's assisted the Oyarzabal goal. And the ball that he plays, it's right down the middle of the pitch. And it's so, so rare that you ever see someone play a ball right down the middle of the pitch, because it's so hard to balance that between the defenders, between the keeper, to get that sort of to get the right weight on it is almost impossible. You rarely see it happen. But just in general, he's an absolute rock in the middle. Moving on, who's your second choice, Matt?
Well, I'm going to go with Alberto Moreno from Villarreal. Having watched him at Liverpool for many years, I'm not quite sure this is the same player, to be honest, but it definitely is Alberto Moreno. We've already mentioned his goal-scoring exploits this season, but I mean, he was everywhere today in the game against Atleti. Luis mentioned it as well, how he covered so much ground. Wasn't even sure where he was playing at first. Was he playing up top with Gerard Moreno? Was he a false nine? Was he on the left wing? Was he kind of, he was covering, you know, left fullback area? Then he was in the middle of midfield. And then the goal he scores is, I mean, okay, Oblak, people will say, should do better. And it's kind of hit at him, but the build-up is exquisite. I mean, it's a fantastic header back. Capu then lays it off to Moreno, and then he makes it. Alberto Moreno makes a perfect run, and then Gerard finds him with a perfect pass. And you know, it looks like almost like a FIFA goal when you just play that little 1-2 and slot it home. And you can see in the celebration how much it means to him. And as you say, he's loving football again. Along with that, continue, because he is a joyous player, almost as effervescent as your hair.
It was good of you to get another dig in before the end of the show. And yeah, I'm going to condolences to Aitor Fernandez, who was very good for Levante and crucial in that win. I'm going to go with another player from the same game, actually. I'm going to go with Jeffrey Kondogbia, who similarly is a bit of a force of nature in there. And I think, I mean, he's obviously a very powerful player, but he has fantastic feet, and the versatility that he's shown for Simeone, playing at the back very often, he's done very well. Like, he's not looked out of place, and quite often has looked better than some of Atleti's out-and-out centre-halves, to be perfectly honest. I mean, he was in midfield today, and he was just fantastic for me, and I think without him, Atleti almost certainly lose a game which they were perhaps lucky to draw anyway.
He got sent off, so...
He got sent off, yes. Yeah. That was the caveat I was going to bring to the table. But moving on, in terms of our moments as we close out the show, Matt, what was your pick?
Well, for me, Levante winning is... I mean, obviously... By nature, it's a story because they haven't been winning, and of course they need a lot more of them. But of course, the one that settled it was El Comandante, José Luis Morales. He missed the last game because of COVID, but he came back and he just showed what it means. You could see the tears at the end, the emotional celebrations. It's what football's all about, isn't it? And you know, these fans have suffered for so long, and for them to be able to see him score that second clinching goal, which was pretty much the last kick of the game. You know, it's just a special moment, and yeah, for me that qualifies for the moment of the weekend. How about you?
I'm going with Angelito Correa, who that moment of genius, that moment of inspiration for Atleti, which opened the scoring. And yeah, I mean, he picks up the ball and he sort of touches the ball, he takes the ball from, sort of intercepts the pass, and then his next touch is the shot. And his next touch, it's such a beautiful shot. It arcs in just under the bar. I think even if Rui was sort of closer to his goal, it would have been a difficult shot to save, but because it's absolutely so perfect. I mean, you highlighted to me the XG on this was 0.0116, which is a hell of a number, and it shows you just how rare it is that somebody gets that right. So Angel Correa for me. I do have to agree that Morales is probably the moment of the week, and that's the one we will be playing out on. Thank you very much for your insight again, Matt.
Pleasure. Thank you very much, Rory.
And it will be Sergio Lopez who takes us out from Plaza Radio. Plurant was the word he used for the players, and that is also crying. So yeah, we'll play out on that. Thank you very much for joining us again on another episode, another match day. Follow us on at La Liga Lowdown on Twitter to vote for your MVP and for plenty more football content. And there's nothing better than tears of happiness in football. So we'll leave you with that. Thanks once again, and we'll see you next week.
Saca Van Gaal. Morales.
Garrifosa, Ciutat de València, la pinya, just en el córner, no està desaficionat. Combat sobre la testa, els futbolistes del Llevant. Plorantes futbolistes del Llevant, Unió Esportiva.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.